All right, on time at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning on Grecian Echoes, we have joining us Manny Frangidakis along with Stamati Sastra with the weekly market update. And we got a full studio in-house today with myself, Costa Spedikakis, Professor Petro Vambaka, and Michael Janity. We're all here to hear the news of the week. Manny, Stamati, good morning. Και καλημέρα σας.
Καλημέρα.
Καλημέρα.
Καλημέρα σας. Περιμένουμε με αγωνία να μας πεις, Μανώλη. Δεν πάει άλλο. Εντάξει, πρέπει. Δεν πρέπει. Πώς θα βγάλουμε 100.000 σε μία εβδομάδα? Εδώ. Θα τα μοιραστούμε και οι τέσσερις από 25 ο καθένας εδώ.
Θα πάρουμε τα μάσκετ.
Γιατί για να παίρνουν παραπάνω από 7 μάσκετ, να παίρνουμε ξέρω εγώ 12.
We just broke down the fact that one munchkin costs 29 cents. So you can tell that we're going.
We've had a busy morning.
We've had a busy morning. We're looking for material, Manny. What do you got? Good morning.
29.9. Let's not.
Sounds like inflation.
Touche.
All right, Manoli, you have the floor.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, look, you're still in the middle of earnings season. You're going to have a big one coming out tomorrow with NVIDIA. NVIDIA was up about 8% yesterday, getting ready for tomorrow's earnings. It's down slightly today. But, you know, then your other big event is the Jackson Hole Symposium starts tomorrow, and you're going to have Fed Powell deliver his speech at 10 a.m. on Friday morning. And there's actually a poll going on right now that most of the votes are showing that he's going to come out somewhat hawkish. So you're seeing the market retreat a little bit this morning from the earlier morning highs. But you're just going to end up seeing some consolidation until we get some newsworthy events, whether it's bullish or bearish.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you. On some corporate news, I think it was interesting that Dick's, the sporting company, you know, taking a slide that they said, you know, shoplifting is taking a bite out of the profits.
Yep. It's not only just them. Macy's was down about a 9% this morning due to what they called credit deterioration on their earnings call yesterday. So there is some signs that you're starting to see the consumer weaken here and the impact of higher credit card rates.
People are tightening their wallets in Moscow.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing is that for the longest period of time, the narrative was out there that we were going to have a soft landing, that you know, we were going to raise rates to combat inflation. I think the major thing that has changed over the last couple of weeks is that inflation remains persistent, and it looks as if the rates will remain higher for longer, and most likely probably for most of 2024, and that is what the bond market is pricing in now. You took out the double top in the rate of the 10-year treasury, which right now is up to, you know, 4.34%, that's going to continue to put weakness and some deterioration into the stock market.
And the other big expense people have is mortgages. And if you used to have a rate, adjustable rate, you're feeling the pain. And if you bought a house for the last year, it's still almost double what it used to be, the interest rate.
100%. You know, one of the greatest trades an investor could have made over the last two decades was securing themselves with a 2.5 to 3% mortgage rate, because if for all intents and purposes, we might not see a rate like that ever again. And if so, not for quite a bit of time. I think you're going to start to live in a 4.5% environment to 5% for the rest of this decade.
Well, I think that's going to be good if that's the case. I mean, what is it now? I mean, it's over 7%, right? The
7.25%. Yeah.
So I think that yeah, 4 or 5, it sounds great.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, but you're talking about 2 to 3 years out to get to that rate. Most likely you're going to see mortgages go above 8% before you start to see them pull back, you know, over the next 2 years.
Yeah. I mean,
but it's safe to say, though, man, that it's like, you know, all this, the predictions over the last year or so, even like, you know, coming out of COVID, it seems that we're just kicking the, it's getting greater and greater, like, you know, the soft landing that you mentioned earlier has disappeared, per se, and, you know, the indications are not really that good. And then you're looking at China and what's going on there, and to what extent, like, the borrowing that they've done. I heard somewhere today, I think yesterday, that they lower their one-year interest rates. So it seems like a lot of people are just throwing a lot of darts at the wall, kind of a thing, to see what's going to stick.
Yeah, and that's a great analogy. So China weaker than people expected going into 2023. You know, the narrative starting the year was that the great reopening of China was going to be bullish for the entire globe. That is dissipating very quickly. And the other thing, Professor, is that the U.S. economy has proven to be more rate resilient than anyone expected due to the fact that, you know, the last time we dealt with inflation of this magnitude was in the 70s. Well, in the 70s, we were still very much a manufacturing and export-oriented country. Yeah. We're now almost completely service-based. Mm-hmm. So what that means is that these rate hikes are operating at 9 to 12-month lag. And if you look at the study of the Federal Reserve to show when, you know, contraction and recessions occur following rate rises, yeah, it's about 22 months on average. Yeah. So it's not to say that it's not coming. I think a lot of people got bowled up this year thinking that we were able to avoid it. But in reality, it's that these lags take so long to play out to the economy that the average recession following your first rate hike now doesn't really occur for 22 months.
Yeah, and a lot more susceptible, a lot more interconnected than ever before. So like even like the 70s analogy, right? I mean, just thinking of the economy when you're making the analogy, and I get it, but just thinking like, you know, how susceptible we now are, how globalized our global economic system is today. I don't know, it's no comparison in my estimation, right?
Correct. Correct. And, you know, we're probably going to deal with pockets of strength and pockets of weakness over the next decade as we continue to figure out the process of reshoring, the process of, you know, creating multilateral trade agreements again with the second largest economy in the world. So there are going to be hiccups as well as expansion. I think we go through a period of time where we have to take our medicine, meaning that the real world economy stays resilient. But due to the fact of interest rate rises, you probably see further contraction in the stock market over the next year.
Yeah.
As valuations are due to reset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 8%, you know. First of all, we always go, whenever we bring this discussion up, we go back to the fast, you know, my first condominium when I got, you know, 5B Bridal Path Circle, Randolph, Mass., $139,000 condo. You know, I got in under 10.5, 10.38. That was my first mortgage. You know what I mean? I had 20% down. I think I had to put 20% down, so I saved a year. You know, and it was difficult to qualify back then. The prices were still, they were solid. In other words, people were building it, and they were, you know, if I'd bought 6 months earlier, it would have been like 118. I was in a growth process, but the rate point I'm trying to make is, what's going on with the good quality real estate? It, even at these 8% rates, people are still buying, at least around here.
Yeah, they are.
You're seeing some buying, but in all intents and purposes, volume has massively detracted. So go talk to your local real estate agent that sales are probably down 80 to 90% from last year or the year before level, because what's going on in this environment is the fact that you don't have anyone moving out of their residence. No one's going to trade a 3% mortgage rate to absorb a 7.5% to 8% mortgage. So you haven't seen any contraction in pricing due to the standpoint that there is no incentive right now to be transacting property. So you have real estate prices that remain intact, even though rates continue to go, because no one's in a position where they're being forced to sell.
Yeah, you know,
it's way different than 2008.
With seeing that, I heard some kind of an ad. I don't even know where I saw it. It could have been on social media. It could have been a television or a radio station. I don't recall. But it was about going back to the assumable mortgage, an option with some of these banks are kicking the tires around. Have you heard anything about that? You know, assume the mortgage and buy anyway type of thing? Have you heard any of that?
There is some talk about, you know, you being able to absorb the current mortgage, like buy the mortgage from the actual seller versus transact a new one from the actual bank.
Yeah.
But it's not happening on the level that you would imagine that, you know, it kind of derails the fact that you've raised rates to this level in such a quick period of time.
Yeah, and plus there's so many different instruments now of, like, you know, borrowing, right? Even like mortgages. So all these things are just, I mean, for me, it's very, very difficult to follow because of, you know, I don't know, I mean, you know, I applaud Manny for his ability to be able to, like, you know, to present it so clearly, because the landscape to me seems like unbelievably complicated right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just to,
mm-hmm.
to be able to see this, and to, you know, I like his analogy, his separation between Wall Street and Main Street kind of a thing. And I don't know what the tolerance is on Main Street when you have interest rates going up the way that they're going up in credit cards and mortgages and everything
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're surely going to see that on the other end of it. I
mean, Manny Stamati,
go ahead. Going into the polls, right, where we all know that we have an election year. We have the GOP debate coming up in short order. You know, the number one thing on voters' minds is the state of the economy and the state of inflation. Yeah. So, yes, they're feeling it, but I will also throw in one kicker that you won't see Main Street really rally or cry out unless you start to see the unemployment rate increase. That is the other kicker that is keeping the Fed in terms of hiking rates and keeping rates elevated for longer, is that you've seen no increase in the unemployment rate, which is what they expect to see when they raise rates and expect corporates to continue to shed labor that they've hoarded for years. It's not happening. So for all intents and purposes, people are fully employed in this country. So yes, they're dealing with some cost increases, but you're also seeing payroll increases on the other side, which is continuing to add fire to the inflation fire.
Yeah, but
you know, you're hearing what UPS, and you're hearing what American Airlines and Delta just gave $7 billion and $9 billion packages to their pilots and their staff. So you're not going to really hear a cry from Main Street up until the point that you see the unemployment rate start to tick higher, which it doesn't seem to be doing, in, you know, no matter how fast you raise rates.
Yeah. And again, you know, I think, you know, to this point, right? So you talk about unemployment rate. One of the things that, you know, we constantly look at, like from a social science perspective, we're talking about the working poor. You have people who are fully employed who can't afford to, like, even feed themselves in this country, mm-hmm. right? Then you hear about the UPS contract that just went out, that they're just waiting for them to, and the top driver at UPS could be making $176,000 a year. I'm saying, what? I should be a UPS driver, $176,000 a year, right? So, like, you have this jagged picture out there that you can't really horizontally make an assessment.
But that tells you that inflation will be, you know, if they are getting, you know, like this amount of money for salary, they have to raise the prices. Eventually, that's how the inflation takes place. By the way, the CVS, Manny, they just laid off 5,000 people. I don't know how you explain that.
Is that on the retail side, or is that that's got to be just retail employees, right? Mostly.
No, it's on the corporate side. On the corporate side.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
5,000. So because you can't find help in a retail store. If anything, they're probably hiring even more on the retail level than they are in terms of shedding some corporate jobs.
That affects our New England because, you know, most of their corporate headquarters are Rhode Island based.
You wouldn't check it yet. Yeah. Actually, yesterday they announced how many of them.
How many employees?
They've laid off 5,000.
5,000?
5,000 all over USA, yeah.
All, okay, yeah. So, yeah.
So that,
but, I mean, everyone is shedding a little bit. I mean, even Rapid7, you know, located at TD Garden, Massachusetts publicly traded company, they shed off a few thousand people.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening was is that you've had these companies, especially in the tech, and service-based companies that have really had a high growth model, that have just hoarded labor for the last 10 to 12 years because the cost of capital was so low. So they're shedding, but not enough where it's actually going to move the unemployment rate.
Many.
Can I ask a question? Let me ask before that. So all these companies, right, that had these huge amount of employees during COVID, of which probably most of them, I mean, were they getting credit, COVID employee credits all the while, all of this?
Yeah, I mean, there is this is program.
Think about what PPP stood for. PPP, you got money from the federal government for keeping labor intact during the pandemic. It was a payroll. It was like a payroll rebate.
So in a sense, they were using this labor almost free, government subsidized labor.
To a point,
for a year and a half. 2 years.
Yep.
Got to death you.
You know, and that's kind of where we, you know, how we ended up in this situation.
And that's why we are where we're at.
Yeah, has the Fed done a good job in terms of fighting inflation over the last year? Absolutely. Did they put us in this situation because of too many years of QE and what the last two administrations did in terms of payments during, you know, a once in a lifetime pandemic? Absolutely. All of these things have fueled the environment that we're in today.
Very, very good, interesting session today.
I mean, you know. But I, actually there is dealing with, you know, with a lot of business people, the high-class restaurants, many, they have seen a decline the last, like, 6 months in sales.
Slowly.
You know, yes. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I'm sure your father can testify to that. You know, like, we know people with... you know, like up, you know, good restaurants.
Good,
but they've been you know, down, and they've been letting off some people. Plus, they cut hours. Okay, so that's, you know, like, so, you know, I understand probably McDonald's and Burger King, or, you know, milk, you know, these kind of restaurants, they haven't seen it, but the restaurants, you know, like, the, you know, they've seen it. So I'm not really sure. I don't know how you guys will be able to forecast about the unemployment and, the, you know, what's going to be. Don't forget, the federal government, they, if you you employ, if you kept all your employees during the COVID, you are allowed to receive a $26,000
credit per employee,
right, as long as you're going to prove that you never lay them off.
Yeah, so it's okay. Almost like, you know, there's money. To me, I, you know how I read that?
It's free money. It's free money.
The money's still out there. That $3 trillion, what was the amount they, that's still out there, plenty to be spent. And now there's other, these hawks that are trying to capitalize and making sure you hear the ads and we'll take a piece of the action. I'm sure you've heard these commercials everywhere. You know, get $26,000 per employee credit. Someone's getting, you know, they're starting companies up just promoting this stuff. It's not right. I don't know.
So eventually, when this money will be spent and they will expire, then we'll see a different, you know, like, environment out there.
Yeah.
You know, time will tell, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
But anyway.
So final thoughts on, like, the unemployment situation.
Yeah.
You won't really see it tick up anytime soon, because even right now, there's 2-for-1 jobs for every person that's unemployed. Yeah. There's 2 jobs out in the economy for every single person that's unemployed.
Okay.
So that's why you will not see it really tick up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then... I think that you will start to see some of this part, you know, play out, but it's going to take some time, because, to your point, there's trillions of dollars sitting on the sidelines. There's still trillions of dollars in liquidity that needs to be seeped out of the economy. So the bullish narrative right now, if you were seriously bullish about stocks for the next 1 to 2 years, is that if you were able to combat inflation and bring rates back down to a somewhat lower level and rates contract, well, then you have about $5 trillion that are sitting right now in the U.S. government money market or treasury fund. We're on historical average. If you look back over the last 10 to 20 years, that number has stood somewhere around $2 trillion. So you're 2-for-1, essentially, maybe even slightly higher for the amount of cash that's sitting on the sidelines compared to previous markets.
Interesting. Great perspective. Manny Frangidakis, 12 Points Wealth Management, joins us each and every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Stamati, thank you. Manny, thank you. 12 Points Wealth Management. Manny's number, 617-212-8343. 617-212-8343. Thank you, gentlemen, and we'll regroup next week.